There's an interesting discussion. Unfortunately, as you know, we have somebody in our shul now who just became an oval. So he also asked, what's halachas with regard to davening on Hanukkah? Yotzat may be different, by the way. And the answer is, there is a glaring contradiction in the Mishnah Berurah. Total steer. In one place, he writes explicitly that on Hanukkah, he should not daven Shacharis at all. Just Mincha Maariv. And another place, he writes, he shouldn't daven Hallel, but he can daven until Hallel. Not only that, in three places, the Mishnah Berurah writes that he should not daven Shacharis at all. But in one place, he says he can, just not Hallel. So I didn't know what to do. So initially I told him, listen, if in three places the Mishnah Berurah says you shouldn't daven, then I guess you shouldn't daven. And then I was with Reb Nosson Kopschitz last week and I asked him, and he told me, interestingly, he said, yes, it's well known, there's a contradiction in the Mishnah Berurah. There is no fixed minhag. Even though the Mishnah Berurah in most places does say that, but there is no minhag kavua. So I said, well, what should we do then? So he says, if the tzibur do not mind one way or another, sometimes they do, you know, oh, we don't have an oval daven at Hanukkah. If they don't mind, then it's no problem. You can daven, just you shouldn't daven halal. So that's what we've been doing.
Mikey daven halal.
Okay. So we wanted to start a new Mishnah. I did have a little glimpse in some of the contemporary halachic works on brochas about Pasa Bo B'Kisnin. But I didn't have enough time to see many examples. But one very, very famous example is, and I'm surprised nobody asked this last time, what brocha do you make on matzahs? Why is matzah not Pasa Bo B'Kisnin? What was the third condition? Anything that's crunchy and crackly. No, that's a matzah. Can't get more crunchy than that. It's not bread. It's not cake. So why isn't matzah Borim and Mizaymus? So the discussion, the complication of the discussion is, if you remember, it's true that we saw three different conditions in Pasa Bo B'Kisnin. Three different examples. Either it was bread which has a filler, or it is sweet-tasting dough, or it is crackly. But all of those are not really the essential simonim of Pasa Bo B'Kisnin. What are the essential simonim? What is the, if I were to ask you, what is Pasa Bo B'Kisnin? Not what does it look like. What is the principle of Pasa Bo B'Kisnin? Now, if it's called pas a Bo B'Kisnin, well, certainly it's a type of pas. So what is the principle? Forget defining the examples of Pasa Bo B'Kisnin. If I were to ask you, what is this concept of Pasa Bo B'Kisnin? Really the answer is, forget whether it's a filler or crackly, those are just simonim.
It's sweet.
Yeah, again, but all of those are just simonim. What is the concept? What's the principle? The principle is, why are all of the, you know what, so it's crackly, you know what, so it's sweet, who cares? Oh, that's the yesod.
It's what?
They are not the norm to be koveya asuda over. Now, we have different simonim just to give us examples. That's not the principle. There's no principle called crackly bread or sweet bread. Who cares? What we really care is this the type of food that you're koveya asuda over? That is the enormous chiddush and concept of Pasa Bo B'Kisnin. Now, the Rishonim very helpfully gave us various simonim to help us along our way. But that's not the principle. There's no principle called that any bread which you use as a filler is a mezainus. Why should that be? But it's bread. If it's crackly, then it's borim mezainus. Why? It's bread. If it's sweet dough, so what? It's bread. But that's not the principle. That's just the example of the principle. The principle is, it's not the norm to be koveya suda over. And that's why it's permanent mezainos, unless indeed you go and you be koveya suda over. Now we said it's a bit vague, how many berekas do you have to eat? But everybody agrees that a bereka is something that essentially you're not koveya suda over. I think you'd be a little bit disappointed if you invited to somebody's house and they gave you berekas. Like, where's the main course? Therefore, matzahs, that's why we understand, is a mitzvah lechem haaretz. Why? It's true it's crackly, but you can't have the icing without the cake. Again, the crackly was not the principle, that was just the icing on the cake. The cake is that what? The principle is, are you not kaveh suda? We view, we relate to matzahs pretty much in the same way as we relate to bread. So now the big question would become, Pesedo, so what exactly is the difference then between matzahs and crackers? Yeah, but you'd eat more matzahs at a meal than a cracker? Now don't tell me, yeah, because I use matzah sometimes for lecha mishnah, I don't use crackers. Shkayach, that's the question, why? It's only because we're after the event and we happen to know that matzahs have got a status of bread and crackers that don't, so if you can't use them in lecha mishnah. But that's the $64 million question. Why is that? I would venture to suggest that you may well sit down for a meal and you don't fancy washing, for whatever reason, so you'll take half a dozen crackers or a dozen crackers and you'll put your various vegetables or avocado or dips on it. Maybe as much or more so than matzah. I don't see any quantitative difference between matzahs and crackers. This is a very big balagan. The bottom line is that we Ashkenazim, we make hamoitzi over matzahs, there's no question about it, but Sfaradim don't. Sfaradim do not make hamoitzi over matzahs except on Pesach. Because everybody agrees on Pesach, you can't say you're not kaveh asuda over it. Well, obviously you are, because it is no bread. But it's a very complicated halachas. Even amongst the Sfaradim, as I was looking up this morning, even then it's unclear. Some of them, they do wash their hands, but they just don't make hamoitzi. It's a big balagan. But again, blina de blina, I want to look this up. It's very, very important to have some further examples of Pasabob Kistin. Okay, so let's begin the new Mishnah, and we should really dedicate today's learning to our dear friend Rabbi Yosef Marks, who is undergoing surgery, I think, this morning. If I'm not mistaken, we should hear Besuras Tevis and Rafua Shalema for Yosef Leib Ben Toiba. We should have a Rafua Shalema, and also to Aviva,
Leah Aviva,
Bas Ita Rachel. Seich Shar Choli Yisrael, which the only of the Surahs Tevis and Mitzashim. Zog the Mishnah. Bireich al hayayin shelifnei hamozoin, potar es hayayin shelachar hamozoin. Now, part of the difficulty with learning these halachas is, as we've already seen, and this is going to be another example, the way they used to eat their meals was just so different to ours. The order in which they used to eat the foods and even the style in which they ate it, whether it was the sitting or the leaning or the lying. So we have to learn what they did and then try and adapt it to what we do. So at the moment we're turning the clock back to the times of Chazal. Birich al hayayin shelifnei hamozein. If somebody made a brocha over wine, shelifnei hamozein, before the food, potar es hayayin shelachar hamozein. This would exempt making a bracha over the wine after the food. Now let's just continue one more line, and then we'll see Rashi. Bireich al ha parperes. Now, does anybody have a good translation for parperes?
Appetizer.
I'm a bit scared to call it appetizer. You know why? Because the Mishnah continues, Birich ala parperes shelifnei hamozein, potar es haparperes shelachar hamozein. There's some parperes that you eat after the food, after the meal. But if it's after the meal, it can hardly be an appetizer. So, Reb Nachum, how did you translate the word parperes?
I thought we were always saying appetizers.
Yeah, but I see that from the Mishnah. That can't be the translation. Because the Mishnah talks about parperes shelachar hamozein. Once you're full, you don't need an appetizer. So what do you want to call it? Dessert. But it can't be dessert because it's about lifnei hamozein. So clearly, let's just at least work out the principle and then work out a translation. Parperes means it's not the main body of the meal. There's a Mishnah. There's a Mishnah in Ovos that says, Gematrius, we have the principle of Gematria, is a parperois lechochma. It's a parperois lechochma. That means it's a nice No, to the contrary. It's like a nice icing on the cake. You don't become a Talmud Chochem if you learn gematrias all day. It's parparois l'chochmah. It's an addition, an addendum to chochmah. If you want to become a Talmud Chochem, then you have to know, bottom line, what's pasavol b'kisin. That makes you into a Talmud Chochem. If you know a nice gematria, if you happen to know that Yavon is gematria of 66, which is the same gematria as Galgal. What's Galgal? Galgal. A meal.
A wheel.
A wheel, or Galgal means a whole mareches. It's some say that Yavon, as we know, only agreed to the principle of Teva. As we mentioned in last night's shiur, anything beyond Teva, they totally denied in its existence. So Galgal means like the galaxy. They were happy to admit that the galaxy, the world as we see it, exists, but nothing beyond that. So Galgal is 66 and Yavon is 66. So that is parperois l'chochma. So I see that parperis is what? An addition. So too over here. You can have an addition to your meal, either as an entree, as an hors d'oeuvre, or as a dessert. But I don't think we can really translate it accurately as an appetizer or as a dessert, because it's not necessarily one or the other. So it's clearly some food that it's eaten either before the meal or after the meal. So yayin and parperes. In both cases, if you make a bracha on them before the meal, that then will exempt the bracha over them after the meal. Azoi state in the Mishnah. So now let's look at Rashi. Birech alayayin, says Rashi, noyagin hoyu. So as soon as I see those words, what's Rashi trying to teach us with noyagin hoyu? That was the custom. In other words, you might well be wondering, what on earth is the Mishnah talking about? Who drinks wine after the meal? And what's this parperes? And says Rashi, one second. You're looking at it at 2019. This is now hundreds of thousands of years ago. Hundreds or thousands of years ago. Not hundreds of thousands.
I caught up on that.
You caught up? I thought the Magachers and Apicurus there. The father always says, you know, the guy came to the British Museum. So there's a big skeleton there of a dinosaur. So he asked one of the workers, he said, wow, it looks very old. How old is this dinosaur? He said, oh yeah, it is very old. It's 45 million and 2 years. 45 million and 2 years old. He said, gosh, how can you be so accurate, 45 million and two? It was very simple. He said, when I joined this museum, they told me it's 45 million. I've been working for 2 years now. Yeah, so hundreds or thousands of years ago, this was the way they ate their meal. Noyagin hoyu lahovi koidim achila. They used to have the custom of bringing, prior to the eating, kois yayin lishtos, a cup of wine to drink. That was the norm. Now, this might not be our custom, but this is what they did in the times of Chazal. Kedatanya lekamon, as we're going to see a brisa, this is exactly one more daf time, daf mem gimel amud aleph. If you look there, the Gemara basically takes you through the whole process of how it is they had the meal.
Seder.
The Seder. Have a look at mem gimel amud aleph, very, very briefly. The first word on the line is ketzad, with a star or a, yeah. It says, ketzad seder hesevo. What was the Seder? What was the order? This, by the way, doesn't mean anything to do with Seder night. What was the order of their Hesevah, their meals? And it describes it in very vivid detail. Orchin nichnasin, the guests used to arrive, v'yoshvin, and they would sit al gabe safsalim, v'al gabe katedrois. They would sit on some sort of couch or bench. Adshi konsu kulom, until everybody came in. Heviu lohem mayim. Then they brought them water. Kol echol v'echol noitel yodoi. Achas, everybody would wash one of his hands. Bolohem yayin, kol echod ve'echod mevorech la'atzmoy, olu ve'esevoy, etc., etc., etc. So you see quite clearly that what's mentioned very, very early on, this yayin business. They've barely sat down and you're giving them yayin. So that is what Rashi, we'll see that Gemara Mitzvah Hashem when we get there, but that's the Gemara that Rashi's quoting. So it says, sorry? Yeah.
No, it says Orkin first. That's how the master had Orkin.
I'd guess, and he sat them down first. So, Ketzad, Seder, Hesevo, etc. Okay, so Rashi's telling us they used to have a minig, they began their meals with wine. Fine. Umevien lefnehem, and they brought in front of them parparois. They brought in front of them these parparois, lahamshich achila. So the function of the initial parparois was to draw you into the achila, to open up the stomach a bit. You can't really start a meal and launch straight into the meat. You need to open up the stomach a bit. Kagoin, what would be an example of these parparois? Pargiois v'dogim. What's pargiois?
Chicken.
Yeah, but again, it doesn't mean like heavy duty roasted chicken. Like a small, like even nowadays you go to a restaurant, they offer you pargiot, some sort of on a skewer maybe. Small pieces of chicken, v'dogim and fish, which by the way, of course, cannot be eaten together, either or. V'achakach mevi'in ha'shulchan. And then they bring the table. Of course, none of this is relevant to us. We sit around the table. But they didn't have the table. So at first, they sat down. They brought them some wine, following which they gave them some sort of parparois. And then they finally brought the table, at which, obviously, they ate the suda. Well, achar gemar suda, and after the termination of the meal, what would the meal consist of? So Rashi doesn't even bother telling us, because we know what a meal is. The meal is the main body of what you're eating, so it'd be proper bosov, or whatever it may be. Bread. Then, they weren't done yet. Yoshvim v'shoysim v'oichlim. They would sit and drink and eat. Umahim oichlim. And what would they eat? Guess what? Parparois. This is now the second set of parparois. What were these? Kagoin kisni. Now we had kisni. Where do we have kisni? On this very armored pasabo, the kisnin. Demali lelibo. What does it mean? Demali lelibo, which are good for the heart. That we had in the, right. That's what we had in the sugar as well. Again, it's not there to fill you up. It's whatever for health reasons. If you look in the Rashi on Mem Aleph Amud Beis, the very first time, that's right, that we hit Pasavo B'Kisnin, Rashi says, La'achar achilo birchas amozen, ha'yiragilim lahavi kisnin. What are they? Vein kloyes. Why? Lafisha yofin lelev. They are good for your heart, as it says in the Gemara, hani kisni demalu leliba. Malu means it's a maila. It is uplifting, it is healthy. It's positive for the heart. That's what Rashi says over here as well. So again, clearly this is not the food that's brought to fill you up. You filled yourself up on the suda. This is for extra reasons. So the first parparois were there, lahamshich achila, to draw you into the eating. The second lot of parparois are for different reasons, not to draw you into eating, but eating, because good for health reasons.
Does it mean literally for health reasons, or it's just makes you happy?
Not sure. Maybe.
It's like a
dessert.
Yeah.
Not sure. Maybe you're right. It's not health reason. The mal liver means it makes your heart glad.
It fills you up with happiness.
Right. Okay. Going kisni the malu le libo, v'lachmanios. We had lachmanios. Remember also in the previous sugya. V'hu yain uparperes shelachar amozain. And this is the yain and the parperes that is being discussed after the mozin. So there was a yayin in the beginning, there was a parparis in the beginning, there's a yayin at the end, there's a parparis at the end. What does that mean at the end? Says Rashi, it was la'acha ha-mozin, but v'shnehem koidem birchas ha-mozin. But both of them were before birchas ha-mozin. So again, you have the yayin, the parparis, then you have the body of the meal, and then once again, yayin and parparis, once you finish the meal, presumably they've taken the table away, game over. But you haven't yet benched. Now, let's go back to the Mishnah. If that's the case, now we can work out the din. So what are we being taught? That if you made your first bracha on the yayin, meaning hagefen, on the yayin shelifnei hamozoin. That will exempt the yayin that you have at the end of the meal, which according to Rashi means after the meal. We'll see, maybe Tosis will disagree. But Rashi learns that it means the bracha you made over the wine before the meal will exempt the yayin that you're going to eat after the meal. Fine? So too, the bracha you made over the initial parperes will exempt you from eating, from making a bracha over the final parperes. Says the Mishnah Vayta, Birech al hapas, potar es haparperes. If you made a bracha over bread, then that will also be an example of a bracha that exempted the parperes. But al haparperes, if you made a bracha over the parperes, loy potar es hapas, then it would not exempt making a bracha over pas, which, by the way, is going to present difficulties for us. And Tosis asks his kasha. Again, what other parperos? Pargios, dogim. Those are the examples of parperos. Why in the world would you have thought that should exempt bread? Do I need a Mishnah to teach me that if you make a bracha on parperos, massive chiddush, you don't make a bracha over the bread? Well, why would you make a bracha over the bread? These are totally unbread related. Fish and chicken?
The first part of this is also pashut. If you make it over pas, it putters the parperos.
We'll see if that's pashut. Maybe this is the main place that we're taught this. We've always seen this in the Gemara, but we've never seen it in a Mishnah. So I don't mind you telling me that pas exempts parperes, but parperes doesn't exempt pas. Isn't that obvious? So you're saying ikka and toffel. Okay, we'll see. Tosa will discuss this.
It almost seems just like sometimes the answer is the flow of the Mishnah. Like
sometimes it could be symmetrical. Zot the Mishnah Vayta. Beis Shammai Oimrim, that's Beis Shin Aleph. Af Loi Maisa Kedera. The bracha you made over the parperes, which we were just now taught, does not exempt the bread, says Beis Shammai. It also does not exempt the Maisa Kedera. What's Maisa Kedera? Says Rashi, Chalka, Targis, Vitisni. Where did we once see this? We saw this 5 daf ago in Daf Lamed, Zayin, Omed, Aleph. Have a look at the Gemara of Lamed Zayin Omed Aleph. There it was talking about Maisa Kedera and different types of bread made out of rice or spelt. And if you see, we're right at the end of the line. The first word of the line is Vahotanya. At the end of the line is like a little Aleph in parenthesis. You have it? The last word of the line is Targis. There also it says, for Hotanya, Eluhein Maisa Kedera. What's a classic example of Maisa Kedera? So it says, Chilka, Targis, Soiles, the Bach says you should miss out, which should be Zoris. So if you look there, Rashi says, what are these various foods? Chilka, it's on about the 6th narrow line. Chiti, Demitavri, Ba'asisa, Chodi, Letarta. It is wheat, which is mixed with asisa, to a ratio of 1 to 2. Targis is chodol atlosa, ratio of 1 to 3. Zaris is chodol arba. So it's some sort of wheat mixture. So the bracha is normally mezoinos. And here, Beis Shammai is adding that the bracha you made over the parperes, not only does it not exempt bread, but I'll tell you a bigger chiddush, it doesn't even exempt Maisa Kedera. Now, why is that a bigger chiddush? Because pas is always the king. Pas is hamoitzi. So the fact that the brocha over the parperes did not exempt the pas, maybe is not such a big chiddush. But Maisa Kedera, it's not the king, it's not bread. It's another item on the menu. So maybe the brocha over the parperes should exempt that. The Mishnah is telling us, no sir, it is not. Fine. Says the Mishnah, Ha yu yoshvin kol echod mevorech la'atzmai. If it was Hayu Yoishvin, what does that mean, Hayu Yoishvin?
They were sitting.
If they were sitting, then each one would make a bracha for themselves. We'll see what this means in a moment. Hesevu echad mevarech lekulon. But if they were leaning or inclining, reclining, then one would make a bracha on behalf of everybody. Zok Rashi, hoyu yoishvin, beloy hesevas mitois. Without reclining on a bed, shemoitim al tzidehen, where they would recline on their sides, smallest on the left-hand side, al hamito, v'oichlin v'shoisin b'haseva. And that was their norm, to eat and drink whilst reclined. But if they were not doing that, and rather they were yoishvin, they were sitting, then kol echad me'echad mevarech la'atzmai. Now what does that mean? It says Rashi, de ein keva Sa'uda Baloi Haseva. There is no kvias. Again, we've had this so many times, the word kvias. You cannot relate to this as a proper, formal, established meal, Baloi Haseva, if they're not leaning. So what is the Mishnah teaching us? If you're sitting, again, this doesn't relate, this doesn't translate in the year 2019, Tofshi and Pei. When we have a kvias suda, we jolly well do sit round the table. But they didn't. When they had a proper formal meal, they were beheseva. They were beheseva. That's considered a proper kvias suda. And under those circumstances, the Mishnah is teaching us that one would make a bracha on behalf of everybody else. If, however, they're sitting, what does that indicate? That it's very arai. It's very informal, just having a quick snack. That's not considered a proper suda. We're not sitting together to eat a meal. We're just grabbing a quick bite. So then everybody would make a bracha on their own behalf. So now we have to see more of this. What does this mean exactly?
What did they bring to the table? Wine? No?
When they eventually brought the table, they brought the whole meal. According to the last Rashi, they hadn't even brought the table yet when the wine and the parperis arrived. Then they brought the meal.
No, but this halacha we're learning here, They were sitting.
Where were they sitting? On a chair. There's no table, maybe. They're just sitting, eating their ice lollies.
This is not during the meal.
Not necessarily.
Well, they're talking about reclining.
That's the second part. If hesevu, if they were reclining, then that clearly represents that there's a proper kviya suda going on over. But either way, we need to understand what exactly is this principle. One makes a bracha on everybody's behalf, each one makes a bracha for themselves. In every case, we always know you're allowed to be moitzi somebody else with a bracha, at least if you're eating yourself. You don't have to, but you can. So what's the difference whether you're yoishvin or musubin? If you're yoishvin, what does it say? There's no kviya suda. What? So then everyone has to make a bracha themselves, and you cannot have one person be moitzi another? Why not?
Person wasn't going to be there for a suda. They're just there for the yoshvin.
So then it's nothing to do with yoshvin or musubin. Even if everybody is musubin, if there's one person who's not, then he's just come in, he's the waiter, he's about to leave. Well, what's it got to do with it? And the truth is, I can be moit to you even if I'm not sitting to eat the meal with you. What happens if you go to a restaurant and there's a table on the other side of the hall and you're on this side? I've got no shaykhis, I don't know who the fellow is, never met him in a million years. Can he be moitzi me with a bracha if he's also eating? Of course he can. There's no halacha that he has to eat with you. So we'll see, Mitz Hashem, we'll see more in the Rishonim and the halacha. We're not saying that there's an absolute chiyuv, but we're saying there's an inyan. Barov om hadras melech. Why is it that every Friday night, the Baal HaBayis makes kiddush? And he's moitzi everybody. Why is he moitzi everybody? Everybody there is mechuyev in Kiddush as much as the Baal HaBayis is. So why is he being moitzi everybody? Why can't we just have everybody making their own Kiddush? And the answer is, we have a concept called Beroiv Am Hadras Melech. It's considered more of a splendor for the king if this is done en masse, rather than every person making his own private Kiddush. But that's only when we're eating together. So it's considered en masse. It's a mass kiddush rather than four or five or six little kiddushals going on.
So should an 11-year-old boy not make kiddush? Is that chinuch?
It's not chinuch.
So an 11-year-old boy should not make kiddush on Friday night?
So where is he? Is he eating with you or is he not eating with you? No, for sure not. The Baal HaBayis should be moitzi everybody. Again, it's not an absolute chiv. It's an inyan of Baroiv Om Hadros Melech. If everybody does make their own kiddush, then it's not a brocha v'atola. I must be honest, it's a little bit of an important question. Have you ever been invited to somebody Friday night and the Baal HaBayis says to you, would you like to make your own kiddush or would you prefer if I moitzi you? Now the question is, why is he giving you that option? Of course the Baal HaBayis should be moitzi you. Baroiv Om Hadras Melech. If you can be moitzi five people, we can moitzi 10 people, so it's more of a mass kiddush. Baroiv Am. So why would you want to make your own kiddush? So you may turn around to me and say, mitzvah boy, yoiser mi b'shluchoy. It's better always to do a mitzvah yourself than have a shliach perform it on your behalf. But that can't be true, because if that's the case, then in every single family, everybody should be making kiddush. Why would I have my wife and my children relying on my kiddush, but I'm their shliach? So it's better to do a mitzvah yourself than to aladei a shliach. So it's a whole complicated discussion. When I make kiddush for you, am I considered your shliach? How are you yotzer, by the way? We learned this in Sukkah. Shemeya ko'ina, the famous principle of Shemeya ko'ina. When you listen, it's as if you have responded. So do I become your shliach? Perhaps not. So if I'm not considered your shliach, and there is nothing wrong with hearing kiddush from the Baal HaBayis, so why should guests be any different? So I'll tell you a little secret. When I invite guests Friday night, I do not offer them to make kiddush. If they ask, would you mind if I make my own kiddush? Yeah, fine, no problem. I'm not going to offer it. I, as my chiv of kiddush goes, my personal chiv of kiddush is Baroiv Am Hadras Melech. The more people involved, the better. Why would I want to offer them something which will compromise my kiddush? If they've specifically asked for it, fine. No, they obviously want to make their own kiddush. I'm not going to say no. It's a mitzvah chas zorchim, but I don't offer it.
So should I stop? My son likes to make kiddush on Friday night. Should I tell him not to?
Depends. Your son. Again, you have to know your son. Essentially, if you're asking me a halachic shaila, for sure you should make your own kiddush. If you tell me, listen, you don't know my son, if I tell him he's not going to make kiddush, it's going to be World War III, and there's going to be not much chinuch in that, then I'd say it's a mitzvah for him to make his own kiddush. You have to know your son. But essentially, halachic, either way, if you do tell him not to, at least you should explain to him why that is. Not just, you're not making your own kiddush. Why? Z.
There is someone who eats by us periodically who makes his own kiddush.
Okay.
Next time they come, shit.
If you know he likes to, then you can offer him. There's no problem. If you know that he likes to, I know in my house my father-in-law likes to make his own kiddush. I always offer him.
He doesn't trust
him. He doesn't trust his own. I don't know. But the truth is, you know what I do? Then he just might see everybody. It's that way you get the best of both worlds. He's made his kiddush, so he's happy, and then we've got our kiddush of Roy Bam, so I won't make kiddush. So when he comes to us, he makes kiddush on behalf of everybody. So that way, we haven't both made kiddush. One miler, a second miler is he likes to make kiddush Friday night. Fine.
Should I offer this person to be motzi everyone, and then he makes kiddush for him?
No.
No, I should still make.
You don't know my following.
Okay. No, he's family.
Whatever.
Okay.
They used to tell his joke. You know, the teacher in school asked one of the pupils, if you have 5 candies and your brother has 7 candies and you take one of his candies, how many will you have? The kid answered, none. Kid says, you don't know mathematics. He said, you don't know my brother. So l'chatchila, l'chayr, there's an inyan of b'roiv am hadras melech. So here we're being taught, however, b'roiv am hadras melech necessarily requires there to be an am. There has to be a joint group of people. If you're eating b'oifan arai in a very informal, casual way, there's no connection. He's eating, I'm eating, they're eating. But if we're eating together as a meal, what's that mean, together as a meal? Is a proper kvias suda. That's only with haseva. That we'll see more in halacha. Okay. Zot the Mishnah. Bo lohem yayin betoich hamozoin. So until now we spoke about wine before the meal and wine after the meal. Now we're being taught about wine during the meal, and this is a very strange halacha. Kol echod ve'echod mevarich la'atzmoi. Then everybody makes his own personal bracha. But achar amazayin, but if it is after the food, then echod mevarich l'kulam. Why should this be? Why should there be a difference with regard to you make one bracha, or does everybody make a bracha on behalf of everybody, whether you're having wine during the meal or after the meal? Why should that be? So Rashi says, the Gemara Mefarish time. Top Rashi, the Gemara will explain. Clearly, the Mishnah is very difficult to understand. It doesn't really make sense at first sight. And Romela, Rashi says, fine, you'll see shortly how to learn this. Fine. Says the Mishnah in conclusion, Vehu Oimer al Hamugmar. What's Mugmar?
Incense.
It's incense, which, what are they used to do with it? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi explains. Vehu oimer al hamugmar. Oisai shebirech al hayayin. The one who made a bracha on the yayin, who mevarech al hamugmar. He should be the one too who's making a bracha over the mugmar. What was that? Again, shehoyu regilim. This is again, we've had this word. We don't do this, but they used to have a custom, lahavi lefnehem, to bring in front of them achar achila, after the food, avkas roichlin al ha'esh. They used to bring spices, powder of spices, and put it on the fire. So they used to bring like a little, remember in school, those Bunsen burners? You went to school, didn't you?
I did.
I'm happy to hear.
They didn't trust us with fire.
Though. They didn't trust you with the fire. They used to put like a little flame in the middle of the table, and they used to put besomim over it. For what purpose? Not for eating. B'machtois, says Rashi, in little pans, l'reach toiv, for pleasant fragrance, umavarchin olav, b'irei atzei besomim. This was the way. So after they finish eating, everyone used to have like a nice, pleasant smell. So, whoever would make a bracha over the wine, he was the one who also made a bracha, again, on behalf of everybody else, over the mugmar. Says the Mishnah in conclusion, V'afalpi, even though she'ein mevi'en es ha-mugmar, elalach ha-suda. Even though they only brought the mugma after the meal, says Rashi, what does that mean after the meal? Lach ha-birkas ha-mozayin. So I would have thought, therefore, it's totally disconnected from the meal. She'einoi mitzor ke-suda. This cannot be regarded as one of the needs of the suda. It's not even part of the suda. It's only brought to the table or brought to the room after birkas ha-mozayin. Afilu hachi. Nonetheless, mi sheberach al hayayin, the one who made a bracha over the wine, and now Rashi fills us in on the logic, shehischil bebrachois, achroinois, therefore, goimron. If you're a maschil, you have to be a goimer. If you began something, then you finish it. This is, by the way, a halachic principle. We have this principle in many places, hamaschil b'mitzvah. If somebody begins a mitzvah, oimrim loy gemoir, then you tell him essentially he should be the one to carry it out until its conclusion. For example, maybe an example, the minig comes from the Mishnayos already. The one who gets, for example, haftorah on Shabbos morning in many places has the minig to go on and daven musaf. Technically speaking, you might well ask, whoever davens shachris, whoever's the chazan for shachris, why is he not the chazan also for musaf? If you've begun, then you should finish. And indeed, in some shuls that I know, they do that. I'm not talking about where they have official cantor, obviously he davens everything, but even when they have different people davening for the Omid, in some shuls, indeed, that's the minig. A maschil b'mitzvah, oimrim lo yigemor, whoever begins the mitzvah has to finish it as well. So it seems to be, and we'll discuss this later on when we get in the Gemara, but that's the principle that we're meeting over here as well. Whoever begins this mitzvah, or at least the brachas, should continue it to its conclusion. It's interesting. I don't know if you've ever been at a bris where they've split the brachas into two. Have you ever seen that? Right.
Yeah.
You've seen that?
Yeah.
But it's not normally done, but it is sometimes done. For example, if you've got two family members or Rabban, whoever it may be, you want to mechabed. So for the first, we'll get the first one, as we did. Rosh Hashanah, Kiryas Abris. And the second one, it's a separate bracha. Now, you might ask, is that lachatchila? Maybe it's not lachatchila. Whoever starts should finish. So we'd have to know, when does this principle start? What's called beginning, what's the ending? Do two minutes have to be connected, related, how so? So we'll see.
I feel like that principle is endless. Say with Sheva Brachos, where you know.
Right, good point. And I'll tell you the truth, in some places that was the minig. I know at my parents-in-law's wedding, one person, my grandfather, who was a chazan, got all the brachas. If I'm not mistaken, it's a relatively speaking new minhag that we divide all the brachas up to the uncle and the rov and the neighbor and the Rosh Hashiva and the brother-in-law and the cousin. I think it's a new minhag. It used to be, essentially, do you know who really makes those brachas? The chazan. Brachas HaChasanim. The chazan makes those brachas. It's really his chiv. So why don't we actually have the chosn making the bracha? Because we don't want to embarrass somebody who can't make the brachas. So we have somebody making on his behalf who we know can. If the chosn always had to make the brachas, it would be highly embarrassing for a chosn who's incapable of reading. Seder, but essentially, is a shliach of the chosn. So yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the minig used to be that there used to be one person who said all the brachas on his behalf. All right. We'll hold it over here. Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach, we will continue on Thursday morning.